The specialists are back, and we are recapping the Traitors U.S. Season 2, episode number 7, the decline heard around the world. I don't know if Miss Phaedra and Miss Parvati have ever been denied by a good-looking man quite the way they were denied by Pilot Pete tonight. We're going to be breaking down whether or not that was the right move or the wrong move. I'm very interested to hear what Will's takes are because I know he likes to play contrarian, so that'll be fun. Talk all about that challenge where we saw Sandra the Queen Diaz Twine win a challenge. I don't care if it was useless and pointless. She won the damn thing. And we'll talk about this weird twist at the end that was with these with the torches and the fact that there wasn't a banishment ceremony and it led to just a couple people being eligible to be voted out. Thomas McGee says hello. Will, I say hello. What's going on?
What is going on? Yeah, actually a lot to talk about here with you know, the decline by Pete and the twist you just mentioned. But other than that, I feel like this was like a setup episode, almost like we were building up to this pace of eliminating just faithful after faithful. We figured out Dan, and now this kind of felt like a reset for me. I don't know if you felt that way, but it felt like, okay, we're entering like a new stage of the game. It's mm-hmm. funny because Parvati is in so much trouble. She had no chance of actually getting eliminated tonight. There was
none
way for her to be banished. And I do wonder if this twist is like one of those back pocket things they have ready where it's like, okay, well, we can't lose back-to-back traitors. So, and the person didn't accept the recruitment, which we didn't expect either. Mm-hmm. So it's like, all right, we got to kind of milk our Parv and Phaedra time as long as we can. I'm also left a little confused on some of the decisions that were made in that twist with the torches, which I'm sure we'll get to. But yeah, there's a lot to talk about here. I don't know if it was like the most thrilling episode. Again, no one got banished and we still didn't know who got murdered. So like we are sitting here with the same cast that we entered this episode with.
Yeah. You said it felt like a setup episode. Is it possible for an episode of this nature where nobody goes home in a show where generally we see two people go home every episode? Is it possible for that to not feel like a setup? Thomas McGee says this was a great episode. The one thing I will say, I don't think it was a great episode, but I will say it was an interesting one. And I do appreciate
it. I would say it was good. Like it's a very solid.
It was an interesting one. A lot of the complaints that we were having after season one and a lot of our concerns coming into this season, everything like that, they are taking chances and they are taking risks and they're willing to mess with the way the structure of the show is. And I appreciate that even if we don't actually know how this is going to pay off. To me, anybody who's a fan of like Dune, the Dune Part 1 movie, it ends literally without ending anything in Part 1. It just like the movie's over. That's how this kind of felt. Like was it good? Yeah. Can I say confidently that it was great? No, because I need to see what's going to happen next for this to actually have meaning.
Yeah, it could have been one of those things where, okay, we're not going to banish anybody, but we're going to show you who got murdered. Maybe like this, that's the ending of this episode because episodes usually do end with an elimination, you know, the banishment. And so if you're not going to do that, you could maybe at least reveal who the traitors murdered. I don't know. I mean, again, most people are going to watch this on a binge. And like we're watching it week to week, so it's a little more frustrating, but I'm okay with not eliminating someone. It just felt like we're building up a lot here. Like a lot of like of the bricks were laid tonight, and we'll see what those turn into. Seeds were planted. Maybe that's a better analogy. We plant the seeds and we'll see the plants and the flowers grow. I don't know, on the next time.
Torches were lit, and now we have to see if it burns anything down. I don't know.
Sure. There's
torches.
Sure. We'll take
at least there were torches. There weren't any seeds, although there were leaves. We did see leaves. What did you think? Cause you're the challenge guy. So since we never really talked about the challenge in this, what do you think about the fact that they have them getting caught in nets and falling into oil/mud, whatever it was? What do you think about that?
I actually thought like the physical nature of how this challenge works, I really like. Again, as good as the challenges have been, some of them I've really enjoyed. You know, like the bird one I liked. I know you didn't like that one as much. You know, where they're working together all as a team, we have the time limit. We've kind of talked about, hey, that timer seems like it's totally fake and it kind of feels contrived. This was great. I mean, the net thing was so funny. I like how they walk out and then they trick them. Like the right answer was right under a net opposite of it with the sun moon thing. I'm pretty sure it was that one. Again, it's the problem isn't the challenges themselves. It's what the challenges mean. And it's like no one's, and we've talked about this before, it's like you don't watch, like, oh, wow, Parvati helped the team get the most money. It doesn't change your opinion of her whatsoever because the traders and the faithful will play the challenge in the exact same manner. And so
what I,
as yeah, fun as they are, and especially in this episode, we're going to give out like, what, like five more shields or four more shields, essentially, with the fire twist.
Yeah.
That the shields of this challenge feel less important because there were so many available later. So I think it's okay. I think they're okay in terms of what we're getting from them. It's just like they're meaning to the overall format. I wish there was meaning. I wish there's more meaning, Phil. Yeah. I don't know what that is, but yeah.
Well, I will say, so okay. First of all, I just want to apologize if there's crazy background noise on me here. I don't know how much of it is being picked up. I'm not in my usual spot. I'm traveling this weekend, so I'm just like, it could be loud.
I don't hear background noise.
Okay, there was a heater on. Yeah, I'm not in Florida, and now we have to use heat, so it was just super loud. Mm. But okay, the one thing that I appreciated about this challenge, and I do think that this is a step in the right direction for the traders, and look, today announced Trader Season 3 is happening. We know it's happening. It's been announced. Peacock came out with that. So get ready, get excited. Who's going to be on season three? Ooh, this is going to be fun. I think one thing I'm looking forward to in season three is it feels like they are willing to work these challenges until they actually figure out what's going to make them meaningful. And what I appreciated about tonight's was they broke off into pairs and they raced. And the team that won, won. And they got the shields. That's a good trend to have. It's not random. It's not people over there. And because the money is so useless to us as a viewer, I didn't even remember that, oh, they only got $8,000. It's like, I really don't care. This is really good that at least Sandra and Kevin were the ones who got the objects, got the shields, because Sandra and Kevin won this portion and did it in the fastest time. That's the direction that the challenge needs to go. I know they don't want to be like immunity and doing what so many other shows do, but that might be their option at this point to keep viewers invested.
I think it's an option. You know, it's basically then you're getting money, but you're basically calling it a shield challenge. This is what you get. You're playing for safety, essentially, if that's what you want to do. To me, this show is called The Traitors, and it's about, you know, outmaneuvering, outsmarting, and identifying lies and trying to set traps and trick people. And so I wish the challenges allowed the players to do that. That if that's your premise of the show, to gather information or to trick people, that we would be gathering information or tricking people in these challenges. Yeah. And that who's the best at trivia and their memory after hearing Alan Cunningham tell you a few things
Cummings.
And run through a forest, then it's like, okay, I can see that being a one-time thing, but who, it's like, it's even Survivor. We think it's like, okay, you got to balance the ball on the thing. It's like, okay, I guess they bounce, but that's Survivor challenge. That's kind of what it's become. Mm-hmm. But it's like, in the traders, what can we really, I want there to be, and I think we have seen examples of it where you can, you know, the hiding of the shield. We didn't know who had the shield. Look how amazing that played out for the actual format of the game, where the traders need to murder someone and we have the faithful hiding where the shield is to cover more people, and the traders fell into the trap. That's really fun to watch. I think that was universally loved. And so that's what I'm in it more for. And yeah, I think this challenge is really well executed. But do we care that Kevin and Sandra answered questions and ran through the forest the fastest? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, and this is something. So, like, we have Thomas McGee in the chat, and then we have La Morena, who said, love this episode. Even though no one was murdered, I was on the edge of my seat. And one of the things that I ask for the people, like, who are saying that, because I did find it to be exciting. Like, Parvati looked like she was in trouble, and we'll definitely get to that part with La Morena about, you know, thinking Parvati was toast. We'll talk about that. But I think how do they get to the point? Because if you follow along on social media at all about the traders, the conversation is always about the round tables. It's always about the sassy thing people say. But the biggest complaint, the number one complaint about this show, is that for 25 minutes, you're pretty much just sitting there. How do they, like, can this be fixed? Because I get what you're saying.
Wait,
you don't want to
25 like, minutes is the challenge.
Or 20 minutes, about. Whatever it is. 20, yeah, challenge. Whatever the challenge is.
And they're not just sitting there. They have done fun things. It's just that the fun things don't have meaning. Whereas the round table is honestly the opposite. It is literally people sitting there. But it's so much more fun to watch because it has so much meaning.
As a viewer, you're just sitting there because you're not in.
No, I know. No, I know. But it was just funny the way you said that. I was like, wait, for 20 minutes, you're sitting there. It's like, wait, are we talking about the round table? No, it's actually we're talking about the opposite, the most active thing in the show.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm curious what they're going to do with that in season three, because the jump from season one to season two to put shields in almost every single part of it to, you know, the money they've realized isn't all that important. And they know that it's kind of nonsense. So they've tried to figure it out. And I really appreciate that. So I'm hoping that they'll keep going that direction. But yeah, at the end of the day, this is a strategy show.
An idea is like, let's just say you're playing for $200,000 or $250,000 or whatever they're going to up it to anyway at the end. And the challenges aren't about gathering money. The gathering money thing only works if the traders and faithful aren't going from the same pot. They aren't trying to win the same pool of money. Otherwise, you're not learning. You're not learning anything. I don't know. Maybe that's it. And then maybe it is about getting shields. And that's just part of the game. And who's good at challenges to get shields? And then you can give shields away if you don't think you're getting, you know, anyone could give a shield away. So it's like, I could give mine to Phil without telling anyone or playing it. And then it's, you know, it kind of becomes more like an idol. But I think that stuff is more, we saw it with the Peter's plan. I mean, we might look back and it might be season 15 of the Traitors. And we're like, man, Peter's trap really set this show in motion for what it should be. And that there are several shields around. The Traitors might have some, the faithful might have some, and who, whether they decide to keep it or play it on somebody else, going to bed each night might become more of a staple of the show. Maybe I'm wrong.
All right. Well,
but I think that's possible.
Let's talk then about Peter, because the challenges are what the challenges are. We don't need to keep harping on it, and we'll see how they
go. I agree.
This is a social strategic game. That's what people are in it for. That's what people care about. The challenges are just there to watch John have to run around like the old man that he is. What do you think about Peter turning down Parvati and Phaedra?
I think as a viewer, I really enjoyed it because I'm sitting there and I'm like, no way. Like, I was actually shocked. And I don't know if I was on the edge of my seat, but I was really excited for Peter to come in and they get to then. I was really looking for that moment where Parv and Phaedra reveal themselves. And then Peter's like, I knew it. I knew it was you, Parv. But I didn't know it was you, Phaedra. And like that moment. When we got that last season with Ari, it's just a lot of fun when you can see that now he's in on it. So for Alan to come in and be like, sorry, your request has been declined. I'm like, holy shit. Like, I did not see that coming. So I really appreciate it for the shock value that I got while watching this episode. But I still think that's a really bad move by Peter. Like, I don't think Peter can win this game because he made that move. Like, Phaedra and Parv, if they had a chance to murder him tonight, they would have murdered him tonight. And if he didn't get one of the two shields in the challenge, and then we do this shield twist where we don't even banish anybody. I mean, he almost got banished because of this. He got saved two times over. One, by there not being a round table, and two, by getting a shield from this twist. So, obviously, strategically, that was not a good move by Peter. Right? Mm-hmm. Are you in agreement there?
Yeah. Look, we were going to have to see this play out at some point, right? We needed to see somebody turn down recruited. We needed to see that happen because we need to see how it would work. If you go out and play the Traitors ever, you can't get recruited. Like, you can't turn down the recruitment. You have to go and you have to do it. If you turn down the recruitment the way Peter did, Peter just showed you exactly what's going to happen. Nobody trusts him now. And the thing is, he was on it. So why not just go become the traitor and then just get Parvati and Phaedra out of the game? And if you're really so concerned about winning it with Bergy and Shell and whatever, then recruit them as you're starting to vote these other people out of the game. Also, look, I get Peter wasn't on a real game show because he was the Bachelor and he wasn't the one who was actually like almost up for elimination. He was the puppet master of that whole thing. But at the end of the day, who cares who you're hurting in this game? Like, I know that Ari is super bitter at Ceri over what happened in season one, but the Bachelor people, if that's what you're going to be worried about, don't go play the traitors, because at the end of the day, every single person who goes out there, their goal should be to win this money by themselves as a traitor. That should be the goal.
Yeah, I wonder if there's something there with the Bachelor franchise itself, that when people go on to the Bachelor, they are looking for love and they are opening themselves up. And that game is all about honesty. And I know that whoever the Bachelor, the Bachelorette is dating multiple women or men at the same time. And there is, you know, some funky stuff happening, you know, when you're going on 15 dates funky and you're making out with all of them.
10 minutes.
But I think there's something to that where it's like, okay, I'm not lying to you. I'm not playing a game where I'm outmaneuvering you and trying to screw you over. And
no,
like,
even better, I'm just messing with your emotions and hopefully causing damage.
Right, but the goal of that, the goal of that game isn't to mess with people's emotions outright. I think that is more of a consequence of the format where you have one person who's going on all these dates, but the Bachelor, whoever, let's just say it's the Bachelor season, they are trying to find the best match for them out of the pool of women. And they are not trying to like play tricks on the women to get them out. It's like, they can send them home. They have the roses. So they're just trying to get as much information as possible. And it does not behoove them to be dishonest in those affairs, basically. Like, there's no reason for the guys, like, I want to find the love of my life, to then start spewing lies about himself. It's like, no, you want to be as honest as you possibly can be in order to find, you know, the woman that matches best with you. With Survivor and Big Brother and the challenge, it's like from the get-go, it's a strategic game. So you're playing these games a little bit harder. And I think that's why maybe Ari was upset. Maybe why Peter here is like, no, I'm going to play this morally. Is that he used the term morally as if he accepted the role of a traitor in a game show called The Traitors would be immoral. Like, I think he's like, I want to be one of the good guys. And I think that's, if he had come from a Survivor, Big Brother challenge player, is not never saying no. It's going to have to be someone like this, you know?
I mean, look how excited Parvati was when she was recruited. She was so stoked and like, oh yeah, now the game begins. Yeah. No, that's how it's supposed to be.
Could you imagine Parvati looking at it and be like, oh, I want to be one of the good guys. I want to play this game morally. I don't want to be a traitor. Like, you would never, ever see that.
All right, I understand that Stephanie LaGrosa was originally on the Heroes Tribe, and so were Ceri. So was Ceri. Neither Ceri or Stephanie LaGrosa are authentic heroes. They're not Tom Westman going out there being like, no, I will never cut any it's Colby Donaldson. Like, they're not
but
that.
But even Tom Westman or Colby would play a traitor because they know
they would play it.
It's just a game. Like, it's
but what I'm saying is, think about the people they're putting onto Survivor, right? Or onto the traitors from Survivor. They're villainous type players. Even if you put them on the Hero Tribe, they're playing the game like villains. The Bachelor people, I like that there's a different dichotomy there because they are going to play the game differently. However, like, for Peter to turn that down today, we had planned out. If you go listen to our episode 6 recap, Will and I sit here and explain exactly how Peter is going to win the game. He's going to become a traitor. He's going to keep playing the same way. He's going to get Parv out. He's going to turn it on to Phaedra. He's going to bring in people who trust him, and he's going to be able to win this. Instead, he just butchered his game and he has zero chance of winning at this point, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and I think that's just his mentality. It's like, I've been working with my friends and we want to figure out who the traitors are, and that's been his goal. And he's like, I don't want to abandon that. Like, I don't care about the game, you know? But that, you're right. It's like, everyone should come in and be like, how can I win the most money? Like, that should be everyone's goal. And it doesn't mean you have to be a villain. I mean, it doesn't mean you have to be like a mean, immoral person. You can be a villain, and in the sense of what your moves and decisions and strategies were in playing the game, but not like, I don't know, not being like an ass. It doesn't make you an asshole to be a traitor, you know?
Exactly. And that's unfortunately like what happened with season one. Cause I'm serious. Like, if you go look at, like, Ari was still talking about it. I'm talking like weeks ago about how Ceri was so deceitful and awful. And it's like, sucks to suck, Ari. Like, it sucks to suck. Like, get out.
Yeah, and again, Ari's mentality might have been like, I mean, I know he accepted it, but he might be hurt because his reality TV background was more honest, and it was more a goal of finding real social relationships. That was the goal of his show. Whereas The goal of Sorriso is to come home with the money. Yeah. So it's just a different goal. It's a different mindset.
And it can't, but it did lead to Pete doing this and then not reacting at the breakfast. Led to, and William says it here, we might be seeing Sandra's game come online. And Thomas McGee says, I guess I really like the challenge. Now, Sandra and Parvati both were a central part in the strategic aspect of this episode. This was a big episode for Sandra. We've been dying and waiting for Sandra to pop up.
Yes, we have obviously we can get that now, because this was, and that's why I called this kind of a table setting or laying the groundwork episode, because it felt like we got all this information and we got all these plans, but we just weren't able to see any of them really acted upon or executed. So it's like we had Sandra bring everyone together with the pool balls and saying, look, we have us. I think she said mentioned the leftovers at some point, Phil. I know you and
she me did.
Both love the leftovers.
But we're the leftovers. That was the name of the alliance.
Yeah, and then they've got the Phaedra calls and Pete's pals. And basically saying we have to murder one of these people in order to keep the numbers, because they are the peace pals are playing it very stupidly, because even if you think 100% there are no traitors amongst you, you are now isolating yourself from people on the outside that you know are there. You know, some faithfuls are in that mix, and now you have pitted faithfuls against you and a majority that they can now work with the traitors and come get you, which looks like is probably going to happen.
What really makes it dumb, too, is let's say, Will, you and I were playing and we had four other people in our alliance and we're like, we are faithfuls. No doubt about it. No questions asked. Now you ostracize yourself from the other group. What are you ostracizing yourself from? The traitors. And what do the traitors have the power to do? Murder you. So even if you banish one of the traitors at the end of the day, see, and I think like Pete is missing the point of this. At the end of the day, if you kill a traitor tonight at the banishment, you send Parvati home, and then Phaedra turns around and says, all right, I'm going to murder Pete now. And she kills Pete. And then the faithful win. Pete doesn't win any money because Pete's not in the game anymore. He's out.
Of course. So of course.
By ostracizing the traitors, he's put himself in a position where he's public enemy number one, and everybody's looking at him as the leader of that. And they have the ability to just kill him whenever they want to. So what is he doing?
I mean, that's why when we discussed this last week, we're like, he has to accept, because if you don't accept, then you're going to be killed next. And I made the point, like, if you're Peter, you have to accept for sure, like pretty much 100% chance, because you don't know the rules. You don't know, like maybe he was told, but I imagine it's like, hey, do you want to accept the traitors? And that's it. Like, or they maybe talked about it at breakfast where they're like, oh, no one was murdered. That means someone was recruited. Maybe everyone's watched season one and knows that, but like, I don't know if you're playing and it's only the second season of the show. It's like, okay, if I say no, can they just kill me? I mean, maybe he got clarification on that from a producer, because if I'm in that situation, I think he must've, because if I'm in that situation and I say no, I'm like, oh, well, they're probably going to then murder me tonight if I say no. So I have to say yes. So he probably got word that, no, if you say no, they can't murder you. So he at least had a day to kind of figure things out. But not a good move. Not a good move at all.
No, it's a bad move. And you put too much power in the traitor's hands. Because the one thing you do know is you've only gotten one traitor. So you know that there's still at least one out there. And you know that the show is probably going to have two still be in the game. There's no way they're getting down to this point, letting you deny it. And risking the fact that they could lose tonight. I mean, there was no banishment ceremony. So maybe that, you know, maybe that makes them think, oh, maybe there's only one person. But this, you give way too much power. And maybe you want to win this.
Question for you. Sense.
Go ahead.
Question for you. Do the players know that a third was recruited? They don't, right?
They don't know how many there were, I don't think, to start.
They don't know, but it wasn't like, okay, there's a certain number and then one of you is added. They know the crewman added this time. This time there was
no. They knew it then too, because Alan said at the roundtable that the traitors thing had been done or whatever. The traitors have been picked, but there's still room for more. Like, there's still going to be another traitor. He does say that in the first episode of like that. They're like the group of traitors is not complete, is what he says. That's why people are thinking there were four.
Gotcha. Okay, then that one of them will be like added to. I mean, I'm curious how explicit he was with the wording. In what he was telling them.
How explicit? Okay, so I don't want to get too behind the scenes because I know, like, obviously you don't work for the Traders, but you've worked for some shows, so you've kind of seen this. But do you think that Allen is telling them a lot more information than what the audience is seeing? Do you think that the players are getting more information and getting it clearer, and then he's playing it up, like, super differently to the camera, so we're watching a different show than what they're experiencing?
Not all the time, no. I don't think when it comes out, I think at breakfast, it's, like, pretty well written, like, here's the exact proper wording of how we subtly hint at this without giving too much away. I think in the case of Peter getting that envelope, I'm sure there was a conversation had, like, hey, if I say no, do they still get to murder somebody? And somebody told him, no, you'll be fine. Or else I don't see any reason how he could possibly turn down this offer. Or he's a huge fan and he watched season one and he remembers it being the time they recruit someone, they weren't allowed to murder someone. And maybe he just remembered that. I don't know if I would even if you remember that, though, that's only the first season. It's only been one season. I don't know if you can rely on that.
Yeah.
To be like, oh, yeah, especially they for the sure won't murder me. Exactly. Except they have a show that's clearly making changes and that's it's still finding itself, that you would want some certainty that if I say no, it's just not like, all right, he said no. All right. Now who are you going to kill? Like, yeah. I think that would,
yeah.
So I think, you know, things like that. And then obviously challenges, they're always explained in extreme detail. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So La Morena had said, I really thought Parvati was toast. So after this situation, it seems like Parvati probably get banished, even though Pete started to kind of dig himself a hole. And did you think that Parvati was doomed? Do you think Parvati still is doomed? Or do you think that Parvati just got new life because Pete did start acting differently starting that morning?
It's hard to say because obviously the show doesn't want to make it super obvious that Parvati is, you know, public enemy number one, even by Sandra. Like if we're getting, hey, Sandra, I know it's Parv, and we have that whole leftover alliance. Like, oh, yeah, it's 100% Parv. Like, that's really, there's really a lack of suspense. And then we just, with this whole S.H.I.E.L.D. deal with the torches, we're just, you know, delaying the inevitable because we're like, all right, well, everyone still knows it's Parv. I think the scene with Sandra, this is a good opportunity to break that down. It's basically showing us as an audience that, hey, there's a movement going against Peter's pals, even if they aren't. Like, no one's saying there those are all traitors or the three traitors are in there. They're not even saying Peter's a traitor. They're just saying at least one of them is likely a traitor. And we know as an audience that they're incorrect in that assessment, but that at least one of them is. So we cannot let that group get the numbers or a traitor will win. So we can just take out any of them. And that's, I think, a big evolution of the game. I know we're doing our rewatch of every Survivor season and breaking down, you know, every season matters. We're doing that on Patreon. We always talk about how did the game evolve this season? And I think if we do that ever for the traders, it's like, wow, we are seeing here an alliance forming where they're voting in a block or a group against another alliance. And they're not really even that concerned if they're a traitor or a faithful. We just need someone of that group out. And it seems like that is actually a pretty convincing strategy. And the way Sandra was doing it for so many people to see, it didn't seem like it was just like a decoy little bite or bit that the story slipped in to throw us off the scent that Parvati is really in trouble. So I do believe there is some merit that actually Peter, if he didn't have a shield, and that if we went to a legitimate round table tonight, that it would have been like what, like a 6-5, or I don't forget that. I always don't know how many.
I don't know how many people are left, but it definitely
in Survivor, it feels like we always know. All right, we're down to the top 12, and I know there's fewer players in Survivor, so it's easier. It's just funny how, like, I don't even really care or track how many contestants are actually remaining in this show. But I think it would have been something like a 6-5 or a 7-5 vote to get Peter out.
Yeah, and Sandra said it perfectly, as she always does. She said, it's a game, it's a simple game of numbers. And it is. At this point, it's a simple game of numbers. Even if you think that you are playing with traitors, you need to make sure that everybody's on, that your side, with the traitors included, have the numbers over the other side. Because if the other side has the traitors, then that side has the power, plus the traitor in that group has the power. if your side has the numbers, then you can start to say, well, I know I'm not a trader. So now maybe I should start looking at Parv. Now I should start looking at Phaedra. Now that person says taking out MJ is the best move for the traders with Sandra's plan this episode. I think next episode, everyone but the five will come for them to protect themselves. Wasn't MJ a part of that group, though? Wasn't MJ a part of
MJ was part of the leftovers. And that was a big surprise to me, is that we got this plan beautifully laid out by Sandra. And maybe the people over at, you know, Peacock or whoever's producing the show are like, yeah, the fans aren't quite there yet in terms of following the strategy. MJ and who is the other? MJ and forget. There's another leftover in that group. This decision should have been explicitly, are we going to kill Bergy or are we going to kill Trishel? That was the story we were being told, that we need to kill one of the people in the five, ideally Pete. It's like, hey, this is like 101 Survivor. Pete's the target. Oh, Pete wins the immunity challenge, but you still want to target someone in the alliance. Okay, it's going to be A, it's going to be B, Trishel or Bergy. And like them, it almost felt like, oh, MJ. Well, it could be good because of this reason. It almost felt like, really? But I mean, why would you want to take out someone? If you're Parv or Phaedra, why would you want to take out someone from, you know, basically your alliance of the leftovers? Like, unless that alliance is fake and it's actually not that strong and it was just one little fun Sandra scene with pool balls and it's not the full story that we're being told. Because there is definitely that chance.
Yeah, there is. And maybe that was the case. And maybe MJ is an easy one to get rid of, because then nobody's going to be looking going, oh, no, you know how MJ is. Like, MJ is kind of a neutral in this whole thing, even as somebody who is definitely more, you know, even though she's more probably with the leftovers, she is somebody who can fit in the middle a little bit more. The thing is, when you look at the people who are actually eligible to be voted out, it's Bergy, Trishel, Kate.
Exactly.
MJ. Kate. Who's the other one? It's Bergy. It's Bergy, Trishel, Kate, MJ.
MJ. That's it. No,
Parv was the other, and Parv can't go home.
Yeah, no, that's the four. And Kate and MJ are basically on your side in terms of in terms of numbers. And then they said, well, they said Kate.
But now, are you revealing your hand here? If you're one of the traitors, because you sat there with Sandra and watched her do that, are you revealing your hand by getting rid of one of the people in Pete's pals now? Because you're saying, hey, I was a part of that alliance and I agree with you. Let's get rid of these people. Because then maybe MJ does make the most sense.
Yeah, that's a good point. I guess that is interesting, because there are two ways to eliminate in this show. Mm-hmm. And then what Sandra was saying is that we need to banish one of the five, not that, hey, if you're a traitor, you got to murder one of the five. Mm-hmm. But I also, it's kind of on the other side. It's like, if you murder MJ or Kate, then you are giving that side the numbers in the next banishment, essentially, I think, right? I think it's a very, like, we're dealing with like...
It is 12 people left, and yeah, it's 12 people left. So it's 7-5 pretty much. MJ goes home at 6-5, but you probably still have the numbers there, right?
I guess you still have it. You still have it barely. So yeah, maybe if it really... I thought it might have been 11 where it's like 6-5, and then it's like, then you're... Do we even know what happens in a tie in this... On the show,
Kate makes the deciding vote.
What if she's involved in the?
No, she just gets to make the deciding vote. Kate has all the power. She gets to come Kate's... in the house late. She gets to make the deciding vote. They bring back
Kate's
Deontay.
Decision. Someone in the comments, I'm sure it's happened in one of the international
seasons. Yeah,
so
that's true.
Let us know what the tiebreaker rule. I mean, obviously, there's a revote if. You know, if there's like stray votes, but if it's just like, let's say there's 10 people and it's 5-5 and it's deadlocked, then do they both go home? Do they both get
matched? I don't know. Or is it like the trust where then nobody goes
trust.
Home, so then they all just have fun?
Or you could, if it was they both go, you could plan out to do like a 2-2-2-2-2 get five.
Yeah, yeah, you just keep, what is that? It's in One Night Werewolf. If everybody points at each other, you're signaling that it's in the middle.
Oh, yeah, everyone point to the right.
Point to the right, and then you're saying that the werewolves are in the
bet middle. That there is no traitor. Yeah, that there is no werewolf. Yeah,
that's what they're doing. Thomas McGee has a question. CT appeared to be on the fence between Peter and the Leftovers. Had there been a banishment, do you think CT would have voted with Peter or the Leftovers?
This one was really confusing to me. Again, I don't know if the show really wanted to lean in and make Sandra's plan like fully the story for all these characters, even though I think the show's probably better off if we have a strategic understanding of where everyone lies and what their plans are and what their ambitions are. Because this didn't make any sense. CT saying friendship or the game, friendship or the game. I love Trishel, but Trishel's in that five. Trishel's in the Pete's Palace. I'm more with the Leftovers. I can't choose Trishel. I got to choose for my game. But then he picks John, who's also with Pete's Palace. So it's like it didn't make any sense. I think
John is just so obviously not a traitor at this point that it's like, why allow the traitors to murder him as a sacrificial lamb in any chance?
No, but then he had some word about like he's political, so that will help us. It'll be an asset in this game. It's like, which sounded just like a load of crap. I mean, I don't know. If you're going to pick a Pete's pal, then pick your best buddy, Trishel, and then let John or Bergie get murdered. Like, that's fine. It's like, I was very confused by CT's decision there, I got to say.
I wonder if he doesn't buy what Trishel is selling him. And maybe he's concerned Trishel actually is a traitor, so he'd rather not give her that power. But at the same time, Trishel was so pathetically desperate in this moment that it almost seems so obvious also, that she's not a traitor.
It doesn't matter. If you give the fire, the shield, they should have, I don't know if they lined up the lexicon with that. It felt like they didn't really properly say shield.
They just said you're safe. You cannot be murdered. You're safe.
Yeah. I think they should have just been like, you get a shield. Maybe not, just to keep it clear. But like, if you think Trishel might be a traitor, then give it to her. Who cares? She's safe anyway. It's not like you're giving her extra power. You're just giving fewer protections to other people. Mm-hmm. But John, it's not like you're best buddies with John. I mean,
yeah. So John's I don't know. Man. John's great.
It is weird. It's like, why is John on the show?
That's what makes it so funny.
It's 21, honestly, 22 honestly, now with Kate. It's 22 people from reality TV shows. And then John. I guess we had Deontay.
Deontay was a boxer, and Marcus Jordan, he's on the show now with Larsa Pippen, but he's not technically like from a show. He's not like a star, but it honestly reminds me of like a Tim Robinson, I think you should leave sketch. Like that's, I want this sketch so bad of here's your 20 reality stars and Tim
and it's just like, and John.
Yeah. And like whatever they would have do, like Tim Robinson can come up with a sketch. He's much funnier. But I feel like that would just be such a funny sketch because that's what John feels like. Even watching John try to run around and do these challenges, it's like he doesn't belong. Like there's no part of him that should be out there. He's in
with Pete's pals, it seems like. I mean, he's getting the fire brought to him. Like he's integrated himself very well. And I don't, it's really nothing on John. It's just such an interesting casting decision.
So. Yeah. He might be a winner of this show. Like that's how crazy this whole thing is. He might win.
I feel like I ask you this every single Traitors recap we do. Like, do we know the total episode count? I saw that it was 12 episodes or 10 plus a reunion for season one. But are we three episodes away from a finale? Is this a 10 episode show? And then a reunion?
I don't know. So, like, how are we supposed to know how many episodes there's going to be in the show when they can't even tell us what time it actually starts? They keep saying 9 p.m. Eastern, and then every week Mike Bloom is tweeting about it, like, starting at 8:30 because it's already out. It's just crazy that they, like, aren't sticking to their time, even though they seem really committed to it. But it does look like it's February 29th. And it says at 9 p.m., which means it's probably going to be at 6 p.m. Eastern. So
like 5:45 p.m. Pacific.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just going to keep getting earlier and earlier. Like they just aren't sticking to it, but it looks like February 29th. So yeah, we're three episodes away. We got next week, the week after, and then the finale. That's it.
That seems like too few of episodes with still having 12 people left.
With having 12 people, especially like with all the changes we're making.
We're going from Well, then obviously, hey, let's just call it 11 because we're gonna someone's gonna get murdered right at the top of episode 8. So we're entering episode 8 with 11 people, and then by the end of episode 10, we need to be. I mean, what's the highest number you can have of winners with a satisfying conclusion? Like, you can't have 8 winners or 7 winners. I think 6 is probably like the highest you could go.
Being that this is where we're at right now, do you think that this lends itself to the faithful are going to win?
I was going to ask you that. Where were we at this point last season? Like, how many people were alive at the top of episode 8?
All right, I'm pulling it up. I'm pulling it up right now. First of all, that person said, I think it's random out of the 2 that get banished. If it's a tie, that would be insane. I'm not doubting him. I'm just saying that would be crazy. So we're going into episode 8.
Mm-hmm.
Into episode 8. That was when Ari got the offer and accepted it. And then Rachel was banished. So nobody was murdered at the start of the episode. They started that episode with 8 people. We're starting this one with 11. We're really starting it with 12 because somebody hasn't been murdered yet. Right. So we're talking a difference of 4 people. And Suri won by herself last year. Does this lend you to think that the faithful are going to win?
Yes, or maybe the traders get to recruit one more person. They win. I doubt that's happening. I don't think a sole winner is very likely. But, I mean, we got down with, it was like the final 5 once we started doing the final segment, I think.
Episode 10 of last season started with 5 people. Christian was banished at the end of episode 9. So going into episode 10, there were 5 people. They're not eliminating 6 people over the next 2 weeks. 7 people over the next 2 weeks. They still have to eliminate the person we don't know was murdered. So there's 7 more people that need to go. And I know that they started with 2 extra people technically, but still.
Right. Let's hash this out. We're at 12. We're going to be at 11 very quickly. Then we'll banish someone at the end of next episode and be at 10 with a murder coming. And then we'll be at 9.
We'll be at the top of episode 9.
Okay. And then you're going to get 2 more down. And I think starting a finale with 7 isn't crazy.
Isn't too crazy. Yeah, that's not too crazy. Yeah, you can do that. And then what do you think about this?
You could double a limb in the middle somewhere there.
Mm-hmm. Last episode, I mean, there could be 5 people who all just stand around and just keep eliminating each other. Like, we saw how long that could have lasted last year.
That's what I mean, too. It's like that segment itself lends itself to starting with a high number.
Yeah. La Morena says, since Parvati was on the line for banishment, she should have acted scared and pleaded for the torch like Dracel did, so she didn't look suspect. And then, on top of that, I just want to mention, Phaedra's saying, you need to stop being an ice queen, stop doing that, and like making fun of her face, because Parvati just keeps squinting. Why wasn't Parvati pushing harder on this? Why wasn't she being a little bit more desperate, considering this really was her opportunity to be desperate, because people were so clearly coming for her? I know we've never really seen Parvati play desperate in any season of Survivor, but why do you think she didn't do that?
I was wondering the same thing. Like, hey, you should beg for it here to get it off you. I think at this point she feels like there's so much heat that if she like begs and pleads, they'll be like, oh, what a traitor, you know, like they'll just go there.
Never seen her act.
And at this point, it's like she knows she doesn't actually need it. I mean,
yeah. It does. It's so out of character for her. Because I even think about the hero.
It is out of character, but it's like, I don't know. We talk about this with the show. It's like the players aren't playing as you really should. It's like if you do something, if you're calling out a bunch of names and trying really hard to figure out who the traitors are, like everyone just thinks you're a traitor, even though that's what a faithful would do. So it's like, we're not fully there yet in the metagame of like, okay, you need to pretend to be the other side, because it's just, people haven't had success. Going full traitor is not a successful move. Something here, Phil, that I think, I forget who said it. I think it might have been Trishel, maybe, like called Parv like a wounded puppy, and that killing her now wouldn't make any sense, and let's keep her around as an obvious traitor vote. And that was some unique strategy that we also are kind of hearing for the first time. I don't think that ever happened in season 1.
Well, and especially since it's pretty clear that the person didn't accept the traitor thing, because I do think when Pete went and told them all, I didn't accept it. I think most of them believed him, all the people in his group, especially the way he pulled them aside. And I think that made him look sketchy to everybody else, because everybody else is like, well, why is Pete doing this? And he's not including me in the way that was like, no, just go outside. We'll tell you later. It's like, that's not going to work in a game like this. However, I think his group really believes him that he turned it down. So if he turned it down, then they're sitting there going, okay, we know Parv is one of them. We need to find the other one. So why not keep throwing darts? Because the one thing we haven't seen in this show, even though we have seen people become traitors, we've never seen somebody go from traitor to faithful. And it won't happen. I don't think it'll ever happen. I don't think it works as a game mechanism. So if that's
it's
the case,
crazy. It's not like you could switch. Yeah, I mean, you'd.
If but you have go to be from, knowing if Parv's there, just find the other one. So don't waste.
Yeah, no. If you go from traitor, if you go from traitor to faithful, then that traitor who becomes a faithful knows who the other. Yeah, they know what the other traitors are.
Yeah, it's too much information. So, like, if Parvati's doing this, you figure, okay, Parvati, you know you have now. If you can find the other one before you vote out Parvati, you know that you're down to just Parvati. And then if after Parvati goes home, it's like, oh no, there's still another channel. You know, she recruited someone.
Yeah. And plus you are plumping up your share of the money, even if you miss and hit a faithful. So it's like you get your alliance together and just start voting out the other alliance that you think, you know, and just don't vote out Parv.
Yeah. It's an underrated part of this game.
Boom.
For sure. Is that people, like, by getting rid of other faithfuls, you're making it so that you get more money. So you shouldn't be as mad when you're getting rid of these people.
It's the trust. Game of Greed.
Yeah, a game of greed. Yeah.
And Squid Game.
If you guys haven't seen The Trust, A Game of Greed, go watch our recaps. It's worth it. I promise. Just watch the first 7 episodes. Okay, what else was there from this episode? I know that so what did you think? So first of all, Kevin and Sandra win and they get to light the fire first. So they pick Sheree. Then who does Sheree pick? I should have written this down, but like I said, I'm not in my usual spot, so I'm all out of whack. Oh, who did Sheree pick?
Phaedra.
Maybe somebody in the chat. I feel like our fans are going to know this 100%.
It's Phaedra. I just said that, right?
Sheree went straight to Phaedra. That's true. Yeah. And that was like a great moment because it was like, oh, cool. Now Phaedra's got – so Sheree goes to Phaedra. Doesn't go Parvati.
No. Phaedra goes – oh, my God. And the editing in this was so bad, because it'd be like they zoom in on the insert of lighting the fire and then they like zoom out without showing you fire got lit. I'm like, wait a second, and they wouldn't, and then they like expect you to, they zoom in on like CT's face, but they wouldn't connect CT's face with the flame, and you're like, am I supposed to assume that his flame is now lit? But I think Phaedra went CT.
And then CT went John. Shell went John.
And then John went
Peter.
Yes.
And I think John made the right move going Peter. Because if he's telling you the truth, you get to stay on his good side. And now Peter will keep you around. And you're protecting the faithful who's really onto this. If he's not telling the truth and he did get recruited and now he's a traitor, you protect him tonight. It doesn't do anything anyway. And you are.
He'll keep you in the game.
Peter likes you. Yes, exactly. Yeah, he won't. So that's a great move by John. John's probably the best player to ever play the traitors.
Yeah, no, John's playing a damn good game. I think very, very good under the radar game. Yeah. No, that was absolutely right move. It was just like, for me, it's like CT, just give it to Trishel. If John is your alternative, give it to Trishel or give it to Parv. Or give it.
Who do you think Trishel would have chosen? Would she have chosen?
Or give it to MJ? Yeah, I think that, and that's the whole problem with that. It was like, oh, if I give it to Trishel, Trishel's going to give Pete. I know they're really close. And then, dude, you gave it to John, and look what happened. You gave it to Pete, so it didn't matter.
Why Sheree? Why did Kevin and Sandra land on Sheree? Because they both agreed to it, and we heard no discussion. So why do you think they did that?
I think they've just been both kind of in that alliance, and I know Kevin is one of the Pete pals, but I think Kevin knows that, okay, Sandra is going to get her way on this. And they probably both had some sort of kinship with Sheree, and Sandra and the housewives have all been close. We've been hearing that. So I think it was more like, hey, we're both in good. Let's not make this difficult. And I wasn't too surprised by that one.
Yeah, no, Sheree just, it's funny because Sheree's barely talked. I feel like, I don't feel like I know Sheree.
I think
really
she's
at all.
The most invisible person on the season, right?
Yeah, and then so when she gets picked first, it's always interesting. And Anthony McCollum says you can't ruffle any feathers by giving it to Sheree, which I think is a good point. That's fair.
That's fair, definitely.
So then when Parvati was saying, I think Phaedra will give it to me, there's no way you can give Parvati immunity here, no matter
I think that was edited that way.
But I'm just saying, like, is there any way, because like, if you're anybody out there, you can't put your neck on the line for Parvati, right?
No, because then you're going to get banished for sure. And especially Phaedra, who caught that heat last week from Dan. It's like, if Phaedra goes and gives it to Parv, it's like, all right, wait 1 second. This Phaedra story might hold some water. So, you can't do that. What Phaedra and Parv, they're not hiding this. These players are not winning the game together.
Yeah. Yeah, they're not.
We are being told pretty, and you know, we're not having to, you know, crack any clues here. It's pretty upfront that they both don't fully trust each other, and that this duo right now, there are cracks, and that one's going to throw the other one under the bus at some point. And
yeah, I'm going to jump on like La Morena's train of thought here though, and say, you know what? I do think this actually might've been a great episode of The Traitors. And here's why. We're sitting here and actually asking questions we want the answers to, but they're not questions out of frustration. They're questions about like, how do you think this worked? How do you think this didn't work? Blah, blah, blah. And honestly, I'm enjoying talking about this episode more than I think I've enjoyed talking about any of the other episodes. I think there's more to dig into. I think there's more to chew on. And I've really, really enjoyed the conversation.
I think the conversation, this might be the best podcast episode and the most to chew on. But I do think, like, scene by scene.
But I'm enjoying talking about what I saw, too. Which is not.
I just don't know if it was as entertaining of an episode. Because we haven't got the payoffs yet. I mean, it's like, we just. It's a setup episode. And I really enjoyed the episode. I wouldn't sit here and put it up with the greats. I think we've had some great episodes this season where I'm like, oh, man, this show is great. Like, this show is kicking ass. And I Thursday nights have become like, yes, the Traitors are on tonight. Like I realized, oh, 6 p.m. I got to figure out a way to get out of work, or maybe I'll start at 6:30. Like I had to do tonight, but it's like, I'm excited to turn it on and watch every night, which you can say that for there's so few shows that you're like, I'll just watch it later. Like, I need to watch it right when it comes out. It's a rare thing.
Yeah. I got three more questions for you then. And they won't take long answers because we'll hit like the hour here and be good. But number one, what did you think of this new mechanism at the end of the game with the lighting of torches and stuff?
I like it a lot. I think it's something we're seeing more and more in shows, and people are using it in different ways. I think the Circle was one of the early adopters of this, where their elimination. I don't know if anyone watches The Circle listening, but basically all their eliminations are based on rankings. You rank everybody and then they total up the rankings and whoever's the least ranked person goes home. But they did one elimination where it was basically, all right, you got ranked first, but the person on the bottom is not eliminated. Now you get to give safety to somebody. Then that person gets to give safety to somebody. And that person gets to give safety until one person doesn't get it. And it worked.
Similar to House of Villains,
the briefcase. And then the briefcase was the opposite of that, and that was more of a game where you pass that to eliminate somebody. You're like, okay, you're out. So I'm screwing you over by passing it to you, and then you want it. It's like, stay away from me.
Yeah. If you ever wanted to see Johnny Fairplay cry, go watch that episode.
Yeah, no, it's really fun. And then Squid Game did something. I think for a big, to kill like quite a few people, it was like they formed a line and then you would pick people in line and there might have been like questions or tasks or something. But they picked it where it's like you just picking people who are safe and then everyone who didn't get picked was just like killed. So that was fun too. And then this one clearly was for immunity, but the other people weren't eliminated. So yeah, there's different different use cases of this, and I like mixing it up. And I think more stuff like this is fun in all these shows.
Yeah, I dug it. I thought it was a good addition. I think it's fun to mix it up, mix up the structure, let people be on their toes a little bit so that they can't
get too ahead of the game. I was just shocked at how poorly shot and edited it was. And
yeah, I agree with that.
They can do it better next time.
They didn't have close-ups.
Did you feel that? Did you feel that too?
No, I did. Because when he went and lit Peters, I didn't even know he lit Peters. I was like, is that Burgies or is that Peters? Because they showed a side angle.
Yeah, because then they would just zoom out and then there's just all these flames. Then they also are lighting the scene with flames. Yeah. So it's like... Yeah, it was so unclear as to what was happening.
Yeah. All right, next one. Who do you think they're ultimately going to get rid of? Kate, MJ, Bergie, or who was the other one? It was Kate, MJ, Bergie, or Trishelle.
Trishelle, yeah. I think my money's on Bergie. I just feel like, I don't know, they built up Trishelle so much. It's kind of tough to read the edit because they do these eliminations cross episodes. So it's like, were they building up Trishelle in the CT thing? And then like, this is her swan song and she's going home. But it's like, that wasn't this episode. Like maybe it's like, that was just the story. Now we start a new episode with, oh my God, shock. Bergie's been murdered. I don't know. I don't think it's Kate. I think MJ could be a good move. Like if you're thinking really far ahead, it's probably the trickiest to figure out. But then I think the more likely thing is like take someone out of that alliance. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. Bergie feels like a nice just.
Bergie. The problem if you do Bergie though is you let everybody know that. Pete told the truth. Because if you get rid of Bergie, there's no way Pete's getting rid of Bergie. There's no way Pete's getting rid of Bergie. So by doing that, you do kind of reveal that.
But Pete's Phil, that then you say, that's exactly what Pete would want you to think.
Pete, you can't think that way. Pete's not that good at that.
I know. No, the game isn't. No, everyone's like, Pete's very clever. I could see murdering Bergie and everyone's like, oh my God, Pete clearly did that to get the scent off of him. It has to be Pete. That's the thing with these things. You can always just double back.
No matter what it is, it's easy to point
out. No matter what it is, you can always just double back. So
I love that.
Do you love that, or is it kind of annoying because nothing matters if that's the case?
I love that nothing matters because sometimes on these games, I like that people overthink it to the point where it's like, yeah, it didn't help anyway. It didn't make a difference.
Yeah, it's fun. I think what I like so much about the trap that Peter set was that he actually tangibly read Parv and Dan and could differentiate them from CT based on the reactions. That's the kind of stuff to me that this show should want more of. If you're producing the show, you want more of that, less of, well, why are you defending yourself? If you defend yourself, you're acting like a traitor. It's like, well, okay. And if you don't defend yourself, you didn't defend yourself at all. You're acting like a traitor. It's like, okay,
Thomas. Thomas put a question in here. I don't like Peter's group being disrespectful to Phaedra and MJ when they tried to enter the room. It was also a bad game move to alienate potential voters. What are your thoughts? It's like, are they alienating those voters, or does that go again to like your theory here of, well, it doesn't matter anyway, because now they might say, oh, he's so cocky. He could never be a traitor. Why would he act like that? Like, what do you think?
No, I think that's that there. And I think that's where this game could eventually go is let's get numbers. Like, let's round up 8 people with 14 people left. And we're just going to vote you out. I don't care. I'll figure out the traitors later. Like, I don't want to get banished, but then, okay. If we have 8 people and I know a traitor is among us, that traitor is not going to let me get killed. So I feel like that's where the show goes eventually, is where we just get into like, it does become more of a numbers alliance game. And it helps you to be aligned with the traitors and not kill them. I do think this is interesting though, like these 5 isolating themselves. What does that mean for the game? We do know they're all faithful, but the players don't know that. So
yeah,
I like that stuff because that actually does have consequences and effects. So I'm in.
Yeah. I think it was a bad move for sure.
Bad move.
My last question to you is now, since we know season 3 is going to happen and Survivor has had 2 players on both of these seasons, who would be your 2 favorite? Who would be the 2 people you'd want to see? And maybe throw a guy in because there hasn't been one yet from Survivor, which is crazy.
Well, my first thought was not a guy, Bill, and I think you know where I might be going with this.
Is it Kellen?
No.
Oh, okay. For anybody who's been listening to our Second Chances 2 podcast, Will was all over Kellen.
I don't know if Kellen fits into the Traitors. I think she's a lot for the... Not yeah. that you can't be a lot on this show. I just feel like what you want out of the Survivor player is you get the gamers and the strategists from Survivor, and then you get like the over-the-top loud personalities from the Bravo show. So like, yeah, maybe, hey, two birds with one stone, but I just don't think that's what the producers would go after. I'm thinking Michelle, man. Michelle is a Survivor winner. She's very subtle. She's very social.
Supposedly she played a very good game of the challenge this season.
I mean, she played a great game in Winners at War. So, like, she's never been voted out of Survivor after two attempts. I think there's something to be said to look at her as a really strong player. I don't watch the challenge, but I could see her, especially if she has been on the challenge. I think that helps. Like, she's more of a star, and she'll bring in viewership. Yeah. Now, she could be on a non-compete with the CBS shows. Yeah, but I mean, they got bananas and CT, so I can't imagine. I think she's probably got to pay some more. I don't know if she's got that much of a base, but I think Michelle would be good. A man, who would be a good guy? I mean, it'd have to be somebody.
It's Tyson, 100%.
That's a good one. I like that. Someone who's played a few times, who is a certified star of the show.
If you were going to tell me you can only pick one man from Survivor to play this, I'd pick Tyson, because I think he has the best personality for it. I think he's got the game sense. I think he's a lot of fun.
And he's like, great. He's Ryan great TV.
Ryan says Tony, but it's like Tony's so crazy. Like, he's so over the
top. I don't know if this is Tony's game.
Tyson's subtle, man.
Yeah. No, and he's villainous. He's more of the suave villain who, like, you know, is playing with his beard and sipping on his drink. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's a different type of villain. So
yeah.
I like that pick, Phil. Have you Benjamin thought about that before?
Rupert as a faithful.
Rupert as a faithful would be pretty good. Or so, Rupert as a traitor. To really
Rupert
trick
as a traitor would be funniest TV of all time.
Yeah. Did you just think of Tyson off the top of your head, or had you kind of had that thought before?
Tyson's one I've been thinking of.
Okay, because that's like the one where I can't think of a better answer.
Survivor man for this show.
And I usually don't agree with you that much. So you must have thought about this, and that wasn't just like a...
I really did think about it a lot, because I started thinking about the villains tribe, because that's where they want to go, right? Like, they're going with those big stars, heroes versus villains era. And I started thinking about the villains tribe, and I'm like, Boston Rob's almost too big. You can't put Boston Rob on this because he's too big. And I think Tyson's just the perfect guy in this scenario. He is, you know, he coaches a clown, like, you know, from a TV perspective. Coach is not going to go out there and play the traitors. Coach needs to be back on Survivor. I just think Tyson makes the most sense. And if you think about, since Tyson, we haven't seen anybody really play the game the way Tyson has. So I think Tyson would be great.
Mm-hmm. Any newer people? Like Jesse, maybe?
Probably needs I don't to know sit. How Jesse would be.
I think he needs to sit a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how Jesse would be. Bradley.
Maybe come back for another season.
Bradley and Kellen both.
Yeah, Bradley. Yeah, I was just gonna say that. Get Bradley and Kellen both out there.
Thomas McGee says Michaela Bradshaw, Natalie Anderson. Those could be good, but I'm trying to think of men. I think Tyson's like the answer. And I think that might be why it's taken them a while to get anybody, because I'm sure at this point too, Tyson probably like brings in a good amount. Although Dom could be good. I think Dom could be a good one.
Dom is a good answer. That's fair.
Dom could be fun. Honestly, like, I think you could go with the Wendell route too, because Wendell's like a different kind. I think Wendell could be a good one. Especially since his like reality TV stardom has kind of been up and down, up and down, up and down. He's a hero on the first season, a villain on his second season. I think that could be a good one.
Yeah.
So that's where my head's at. All right, you got anything else you want to talk about with this episode, or should we wrap it up?
No, it's good. I really enjoyed it. I don't want people to think I'm being negative, that I don't think it's like the great, like a great, great episode, but I did enjoy it thoroughly. So yeah, good episode.
Cool. All right, everybody. Well, If you haven't checked out some of our other stuff, I'm sure most of you have because you're probably Survivor people who found the traitors after. But if you haven't, our Survivor 46 cast assessment is live, so make sure you go check that one out. Also, go check out our New Era Tribe discussion. If you haven't seen that yet, we did the reveal after all the votes were tallied from our fans. And we have our 10 players from the New Era Tribe. There was actually a lot of interaction from the cast members. So I think if that actually ever became a tribe, they're excited already and it's a fake tribe. So go check that discussion out. It was a lot of fun. We did that with Russell Muscle TV. Next week, Will and I will obviously be doing our recap of the Traitors episode 8, and Will and I will be doing our prop bet game. Not sure if we're going to have a guest or anything on that yet, but we'll be doing that next week at some point. So make sure you check that out. We also did our Phil and Will show. A lot of stuff going on. And if you want to become a patron, patreon.com/thespecialist. Whole bunch of stuff going on. And if you're a huge Survivor fan and you didn't make it to the 2-hour and 10-minute mark of our Survivor 46 cast assessment, if you become a top tier patron, there's 2 fantasy games that you'll be able to participate in for the entirety of the Survivor season. So go ahead, think about becoming that. And on top of that, you just get all of the episodes and everything that we've been recording. So that's been a lot of fun. I miss anything? I don't think so.
No, I think that's good.
Video, like the video, subscribe, do that stuff. We're getting subscribers. Well, it's happening.
Great.
I love it.
Do that. Like the video. Yeah, all that.
All right. Cool, guys. All right. Thank you all so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.